Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I am welcoming once again to this program my friend of some 15 years, April Massini. Welcome to the program, hey. April.
Hi, Diana.
It's
so good
really,
to be with you again.
It's great to have you back. We spent New Year's Eve together in New York City.
We did. How about that? It was so wonderful to see you and to meet your wonderful, wonderful new beau.
He's not so new anymore.
That's
he's five and a half
That's
years
true.
Of fiance, and who knows, maybe
That's
married.
That's right. But he was new to me.
He was new to you, and he loves you. And in fact, he asked me to send his love to you. So I'm doing it
Thank
on
you.
The air.
Isn't that nice? Thank you so much.
He's a sweetheart.
He's a great guy, and you have a wonderful relationship, and it shows.
Thank you, April. And that's high praise, because you are the advice columnist, creator of AskApril.com. This is a relationship advice website. I encourage any of you who have not visited her website to do so, because April... it's an interactive relationship advice forum, and you have now responded to some 25,500 original consumer relationship questions, and these have been posted and answered. Is that accurate?
We're actually bumping right up about 26,000.
Okay, I was going off of your website.
It. Yes.
26,000.
Yeah, and we're bumping right up against it, and they've all been personally answered by me, and it's quite interesting, actually. Keeps me on my toes.
Sure, and you're a busy woman, because you also, and I appreciate that you're coming on this program, and you know, people can call in with their own questions, but it's probably better if they go to your website and post a question there. Although,
well, it's anonymous, so they can ask pretty much anything they want, and you know, their identity will never be revealed. So it's a safe place.
Exactly. And your website.
You can talk about things that you probably wouldn't talk about elsewhere also.
Exactly. And, of course, by going to your website, AskApril.com, they can see what a gorgeous woman you are. I mean, you've got brains and you've got beauty. I mean, you're really beautiful. And I know you work at keeping yourself fit, and that feeds into our topic for the day. But first I want to let people know that you are also very busy with related social media. 1.4 million Twitter followers and more than 620,000 Facebook fans. That's probably gone up, too, since, I don't know.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah. All right.
You're so sweet to me. Thank you so much, Diana.
Oh, well, of course, April. And then you are on lots of, you're in modernweddingmom.com, Journal Digital Romance, datingadvice.com, lots, Wall Street Journal. We're going to talk about your involvement with a Wall Street Journal article, your quotes, New York Times. It just goes on and on and on. People can read about it on your website. The author of how many books now? Four? Five?
Four.
Four. And your first one, we were both in Los Angeles at the time, Date Out of Your League for Men. So you put a chapter by Dr. Diana Wiley in it, talking about sex and relationships. And plus we did some annex learning workshops together.
We did. And that was great fun.
It was great
that
fun.
That really was. You did the sex portion, and
well, sometimes you were blushing, but you've come a long
seat.
You've come a long way, April. No question. So let's get right into it. So you were recently commenting on a blog by Lauren. What is her last name, Lauren? Well, anyway.
You know, I don't, Andrea. But she, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
the so for your husband, and it sparked all kinds of controversy, and actually yes. went viral. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Staying hot for hubby is essential for a successful marriage.
Yes.
Are you surprised the article and your interview in it have created such a firestorm of controversy?
Well, yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised by how nasty some of the comments are.
Mm-hmm.
They're not directed as much at me as they are at Andrea, but what doesn't surprise me is the fact that it's so politically incorrect, and it forces people to look at themselves and to question things. And, you know, when you're put in a situation where you may not be living up to what you'd like to live up to be, you can become defensive. And I find that that's a lot of what's going on. And I think that really what she was trying to say, and it didn't come across as well, is to be the best that you can be and to bring your best self to the table. At least that's how I interpreted what she was trying to say.
Yes.
She wants to deliver to her husband her best self. And I think that that's an excellent attitude, personally. And for someone to say that, you know, dating or marriage or any kind of relationship, male-female relationship, or any kind of, you know, sexual relationship is not about having attraction, it is. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we can kid ourselves and pretend that it's not. But we're doing just that. We're kidding ourselves. I mean, it's dating, it's mating, and all of it has to do with attraction. Even in the animal kingdom, it does.
Yes, that's right. Like birds who can, like the male bird and some species who builds the most attractive nest can lure the female bird.
Well, and how about the peacock? Look
and the peacock. Right. Right.
I mean, so just to beat this woman up because she stated the obvious, I don't think is very fair. We may not like what she's saying because it hurts us, or maybe we're not living up to our full potential. But and she's also not saying, you know, that she doesn't have other qualities going on. I mean, if she all she is just this pretty shell, that's not going to suffice either
mm-hmm.
for most people. But I think it's naive to think, or it's defensive to think, that
mm-hmm.
the way you appear and how you present yourself doesn't matter, because it does. Just look, even a book cover. When we're going into a store and we're picking out a book, what gets our attention? The cover.
Sure. And that's no doubt why you're on the cover of some of your books, showing your beauty. And then once they open the book, they get to see your brains. And your
right.
high
well, that's
IQ, EQ.
Very sweet.
Very,
oh,
but it's
thank
true.
You.
And you know how smart Brian is, but speaking of high IQ, EQ. So I asked him to weigh in on this, and he looked at some of your questions, and he wrote to me last night late, "Here are a few thoughts from my perspective, which happens to be male, but I don't pretend to speak for the majority of men. A core issue here is the value that each partner places on the erotic." Now we're addressing her point, staying hot for your hubby is essential, right?
Right.
He writes, Brian writes, "I suspect that in many cases of mismatched desire, the root issue is mismatched erotic values." Such a good point. He continues, "If a woman values hot sex, then she makes herself alluring or whatever it is that arouses and pleases her partner. If a man wants hot sex, he does things that make him attractive to his partner. Although what each of them does is likely to be very different, just depends on their needs and desires. I don't see why it has to be more complicated than that."
I agree with him.
Yeah,
I
do
thing.
Too.
If your husband, right, asked you, "Would you like a full beard or a goatee?" And
mm-hmm.
you'd like a goatee, and he gives himself a goatee, are we
mm-hmm.
going to criticize him? No.
No.
If a man prefers red nail polish over natural-looking nails, are you going to wear red nail polish? Sure.
Yes.
If you want to please your husband.
I mean, sure.
It's not beyond that. And then let's get into the fact, staying hot for your husband, maybe that's how it makes her feel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she
mm-hmm.
feels hot when she looks a certain way. And what's wrong with that? Nothing.
Nothing. And, in fact, it boosts in a lot of sexual relationships, you know. I often say, you know, you dress for success. You sometimes need to dress for sex and look alluring, and it can absolutely make you feel hot. And I read that you, I'm quoting you now, you become what you are. So the more you work at looking hot, the hotter you feel. It's so
yeah,
true.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It takes effort, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And the fact that she's trying to do it and trying to please her husband, I think that's a wonderful thing. If everybody went into their relationship saying, I'm going to bring my best self to the table, you know, I'm going to bring value to the table, and I'm going to give him everything that I can to make him happy. And if the man did the same, can you imagine how great relationships would be all the time?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely, absolutely. And to quote you again, regarding relationships, let the sizzle fizzle and the spark cool. Not so good. And obviously that impacts the sexual life between the couple.
It impacts everything.
Everything.
And here's the other thing. When you start
mm-hmm.
letting yourself go, it's reflective of the entire relationship, and even more than that, it's reflective of how you feel about yourself.
Yes, that's right.
Just let yourself mm-hmm. go physically. When people let themselves go in every way, if you stop being curious about life.
Oh, yes.
That says something.
It sure does. And one of lots of research studies on longevity, and now I have my gerontologist hat on, One of the qualities for successful aging is remaining curious. We've got to remain curious, and we want to be open to learning new things. It's really important.
I agree with you. And, you know, you talk a lot about self-acceptance versus self-improvement, and isn't that kind of a double-edged sword? I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, I'd like to hear you talk about it, because you talk about it's so important to have self-acceptance.
Yeah, it is important to have self-acceptance, and actually, just to give a little context for this, being comfortable with who you are, a study of some 5,000 people, it was found that the happiness habit, which corresponded most closely with being happy and satisfied with overall life, is self-acceptance, but it is a double-edged sword, because, you know, you don't want to justify complacency and keeping, because that keeps you stuck in a rut. So it can be, oh, I don't know, a thin line between self-acceptance and apathy. I think it's really important to identify specific lifestyle choices, habits, character traits that you should happily accept while also being objective about the things you might want to work on improving. So there's probably a sweet spot,
right,
between self-acceptance versus self-improvement. And I think that it requires being really honest and compassionate about who you are, while at the same time acknowledging, you know, that nobody's perfect and we can always improve ourselves. So this is a tight rope walk for some folks.
Yes.
So, self-acceptance. It's hard for a lot of people. I see it in my practice all the time.
I bet you do.
Yeah. But
and it comes across in everything, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of the fallout from this recent, because it's been a lot, you've gotten a lot of pushback,
Oh, it's been everywhere. It's everything from People magazine to Good Morning America. It jumps the pond, as they say. It's over in London in the Daily Mail. It's everywhere.
Yeah. So
it went viral, truly viral.
So what about the women who say men should love women for who they are as opposed to what they look like? And, you know, I say, why either or? And I think you say that,
well,
too.
Well, I agree.
I mean, men are visual, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, well, men are visual. And my response to that is, yes, he can. And he can love his dog. And he can love his child. And he can love his mother. And it depends on what you want. I mean, is that the kind of love that you want? Do you want him to desire you? I mean, if you're talking about a mating relationship or a dating relationship, it all starts with desire.
Right.
You got to want somebody. Because if you don't, you know, now you're going to have a friendship. You may as well be roommates. And that's
Oh, and then you end up with a sister-brother kind of relationship, which is not inducive for hot sex.
No. No. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why... why these women that are so angry about this and keep saying he should love me just for me. He does love you for you.
Mm-hmm,
he wants you to be, you know, sexy, you know, whatever that is. And everybody's got their own standard for that, and it's in the eye of the beholder, certainly. But there has to be some sort of sex appeal, or a man's not going to want to have sex with you.
That's
you know,
very true.
And the reverse, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what about keeping yourself fit and thinking about what you're going to wear and all of that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I tell women all the time, forget about spend less on the Louis Vuitton and spend more on the lingerie.
Yeah, no, that's
it's
right.
Get farther with men because men aren't going to know designers as readily as they're going to say, oh, wow, she looks sexy, you know? And I think you feel better. I just do. I think that you feel better when you look better, and if you go out of your way a little bit to be sexy and sexual, I think it's going to come across because you're going to come across sexier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to get more confident being that way, and confidence is king. Now you're really, really sexy, and now you're hot. So I think what she was saying in the article is to be confident in herself. She wants to look sexy, and it makes her feel better, and now she's more confident and about being what her husband wants her to be.
You know, I have found both personally and clinically that wearing some sexy lingerie can spark up the woman's desire because she can look at her man's, now we're talking about heterosexual relationships right now. I mean, this can apply to homosexual relationships too, of course. But she can look at her man's eyes and see desire in them. And if she's dancing to something, she can get into the rhythm of the sensuality and sexuality. Maybe she's doing a little striptease for him, and that's pretty hot.
It is, and it's fun.
It's
and
fun.
You always say you got to have fun, don't you? You say that all the time. You got to have
I do.
Fun in your relationships, and it's so true.
And sex is play, I say all the time, too.
Yeah, you do. And
yeah.
I think that that's absolutely true. And who wouldn't want to be desired by your mate? I mean,
well,
isn't that what it's all about?
That's what it's all about. So I suspect I'm aligned with you. I think that some of the ultra feminist reactions are a little defensive. And what else are they, April?
Angry. They're angry. Well, they're angry because somebody's taking a different view than them and they're pointing out the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But I have news for these ultra-feminists. Isn't being a feminist making a choice? Isn't that
making
what it's about?
Making a choice, yeah.
And she's made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't like her choice. So it's not that she's not a feminist. Mm-hmm. They just don't like her opinion, and they don't like her choice.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I do think that I've always been, you know, I was around when feminism first launched, and I was a young woman then, but I even from the beginning, I called myself a soft feminist, because I do believe, obviously, in equality in the job market, and women are still working toward more equality in terms of pay and all that. But I also really, I always liked men, and I liked being, you know, the song, I Enjoy Being a Girl. I've always enjoyed being a girl. What?
You're definitely a girly girl.
I am, and so are you. And so, and some women go out of their way to make a statement, and so that. But let's not get bogged down with that. So you also ended up being quoted in a Wall Street Journal article, and
on a similar kind of topic. Yes, it was about who should pay for a date and the male-female roles in relationships, and particularly in the beginning of a relationship, you know, on the first date, and how it progresses. And then we started talking about it, you know, in this article about, well, who should ask someone on a date?
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
then
let's
you can take it one step further. Who's to say the man should ask the person to marry him? I mean, maybe the woman should ask, and I completely disagree with that. And the reason I disagree is, you know, you look no further than my forum. And at least 25% of the questions are all about, does he like me? Well, then you read a little further about the question, does he like me? And you come to find out the woman asked the guy. And then the woman paid for the date. And then the guy doesn't call. Well, you're doing the pursuing. For me, when the guy does the asking, it sets it all up perfectly for the woman to know, well, yeah, he does like me, and he is interested because he's asking me, and he's paying for the date. Now, I don't always think a guy should pay for a date, and I'll tell you when I don't think they should. I don't think they should if you do the asking. If you ask a guy, you better be prepared to pay because you've done the asking. You've taken that role. And if you don't like that role, don't step into it.
Yes. So you get, you say 25% of your questions have to do with the blurring of male-female lines in dating. So it's created a lot of confusion.
Yes, at least 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is people don't know what they're supposed to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys don't know, should they call and pursue or should they wait for... I mean, I actually get these questions. The guy wondering, should he ask a girl on a date or should he call her? It didn't used to be like that. The reason he's confused is because he doesn't know should she be calling him.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten very confused.
So you don't really like necessarily the woman asking a guy out then?
I don't like her asking him on a date.
I don't think
there's anything wrong if there's a party or something going saying, oh, you should come, you know, something like that. But actually asking on a date, I'm not real big on. I do think you can initiate conversations. That you can do and make it easier for him.
Right.
Comment on his shoes or comment on what he's eating or drinking or, you know, whatever's going on around you. Oh, I like blueberry muffins if you're sitting online Starbucks. You know, whatever.
Right,
You can certainly start a conversation. But when you get to the point where you're asking him on a date, now you've taken his role away, and he's no longer pursuing. Now you're pursuing him.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you start pursuing him, you've taken the male role.
Mm-hmm.
And every guy wants to have something, you know, that he... basically, guys just like to do the chasing. I just think it's in their nature.
I think they're hardwired that way from an evolutionary point of view.
Yeah, males in general. Again, goes back to the species. Any species, that's the case. And so you just got to let a guy be a guy, and don't be mad at him for being a guy, because that's what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand why women get so angry, you know, when you tell them, you know, that's the way guys are wired. And they want that role. And then they say to me, well, you know, a defense is saying, well, now you're giving the guy all the power. No. No, you have the ultimate power, because you can always say no. That's the ultimate power. He can ask, and you can say no. And you talk about people sharing power. I know I've read some of the things that you've written, and you talk about shared power is the only power. And if a woman is influential as a partner, that's how the relationship lasts. And why don't you tell us a little more about that?
Well, I am influenced by John Gottman, and he happens to be here. I am in Seattle, and he's a professor emeritus University of Washington, and but he spent 40 years researching couples and the couples dynamics, and he can predict divorce. He has a love, it's dubbed the Love Lab. But what he has found is that...
What do you mean he can predict divorce? That's interesting.
Yeah, he has, he also has a, he's a very intelligent man, and Brian and I went to one of his, we were comped to go to his one of his weekend in his, with his wife workshops, and he has a master's from MIT in mathematics, and so he worked out a formula, and he found that by observing couples in his love lab, an apartment that he had for years, he hooked up his couples, measured their heart rate, and looked, even examined their urine for stress, and not in the moment, but they took all kinds of measures. And so then he got the couples to argue about something. So if they have conflict, if they replace something negative with five positives, they're much more likely to endure. But what he says that's especially relevant to this discussion is if a woman is as influential as her partner is, then the relationship lasts. If the man is more influential than she is, the relationship doesn't last. And this is based on 40 years of research. So it's really...
Now, influential, I'm sorry, I don't mean to...
No, that's fine.
In what way? What influential in the relationship or in society or...
In the relationship. In the relationship.
In the relationship. You mean like decisions that are made?
But it's mostly about... this interlocking influence process. And at the heart of this is the balance of power. So it's really about responsiveness to your partner's emotions. Responsiveness.
Ah.
And responsiveness to a partner is what makes the relationship feel fair. And really relationships, I see this all the time. I've seen thousands and thousands of couples over the years. A relationship has to feel fair, and that requires flexibility and responsiveness to emotions. And
oh, that's interesting. I've never heard it described quite that way. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and you should maybe read up a little bit on Gottman. He's got quite a few books, but he talks about when people try to get their partner's attention or interest, or even open a conversation, or share humor, or affection. So in their research, they look at what proportion of the time a partner turns toward such a bid or a need. So the turning towards needs to be at a very high level, the bid for attention, turning toward a partner, not ignoring the partner. And he found that this is essential for a healthy relationship.
Interesting.
Not ignoring, but turning toward. And some people just ignore their partner when they have a bid for attention. And,
Boy, that sounds very hurtful, too.
Sure.
If you want attention and your partner's just ignoring you, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, it is. And then the powerless person often then becomes depressed and has anxiety because they don't feel that they're getting any attention. And they might feel loved either. Exactly. A lack of love.
You don't feel anything. Yeah.
Right, right.
Kind of sit there and go, what am I doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't feel desired, you don't feel loved, you don't feel acknowledged, you don't feel anything. That sounds horrible. That's not hard to figure out. That's not going to last long.
No, that's right. It won't, and it doesn't.
And it shouldn't, honestly.
Say again?
If your partner has no respect for you and doesn't love you and has no empathy for the way you feel, frankly, you shouldn't be with that person.
No, that's right. That's right. And sometimes the woman can have a lot of charm and beauty and social skills and fitness level that's high. But she knows that she can function outside the relationship. So she has her own kind of power if she's feeling put upon. You know, I have found that, you have to know you can survive without a relationship if need be, to be really empowered within it. I talk about the difference between want and need, being able to, if you're looking at somebody that you're serious about, being able to say, at least to yourself, as you evaluate the person, I want you more than I need you. I can live without you, but I can live better with you.
Wow.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Hard sometimes, though, if you really love somebody, to think, wow, I can be without you.
Sure.
But
We've all experienced that in one way or another, sometimes with more emphasis or more intensity. Take out a few questions that you've been asked on your website that figure into this discussion we're having about love and power.
The primary issue that keeps coming up and up and up and up and up is women asking, does he like me? Is he interested? Do you think he'll call? They all revolve around the same theme. And the theme is something has happened so that she feels like she's doing the pursuing or that she's interested in him and she has no idea if he's interested in her. And that comes back to, when you read, because they always put, the backstory in there. And when you read the backstory, what's evident is that she's pursued him. And she asked him, or, a more recent phenomenon, it's not so recent, I guess it's in the past 10 years it's really started happening, is hooking up. People hook up, which means they just get together and they have sex, and then women try to leverage that into something else. And, just because a guy has sex with you doesn't mean he wants a relationship with you, and it doesn't even mean that he likes you. What it means is you were willing and you did it, and so he did. He took advantage of the situation. It doesn't make him a bad guy. You're the one who said yes.
You participated. So, you were a full participant.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it would be called rape.
Yes. So, and then they're upset. But, you know, you can't do that. You have to show a little bit of self-respect. If you're looking for a relationship, hooking up is probably not the best way to start one.
No,
and
you
then
know,
the other thing is,
yes.
Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say that there certainly is a power dynamic in sex itself, and in general, men are more driven to have sex than women. You know, there are some exceptions.
Yes.
Maybe even myself, because I have a pretty high libido. But most women, most men are so are driven to have sex with women. And I think an example of this is prostitution, for the most part, involves men paying women for sex. And so I think that this pursuit of sex model of dating is really what informs much of this situation, the pursuit of sex, and it's male-driven.
Now, that's interesting. I had never thought of prostitution as a parallel, but you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of proves it all out, doesn't it?
I think so. What do you think in terms of how you answer women who are befuddled by all of this? What do you say to them?
Another issue is, you know, all related to this is how you start a relationship off is the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if you start off pursuing the guy and paying, you have to understand that that's not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the relationship now has been established. You've established now that you're paying, or at a minimum going 50-50. And once you've done that, just be sure that that's what you want, because you're not going to be changing it. You can't be mad at the guy 6 months down the road because now you've decided you don't want to pay anymore. Well, I'm sorry. That's the way you set this all up.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't be too surprised by it. The other issue that we run across is men wondering what they should do, what their role should be. Should they open the door or not? Should they pay the check or not? Should they call the girl or not? Should they send flowers or not? You know, all of these things that used to be, you know, ritual-like when you're, you know, trying to woo somebody. Well, the wooing is all gone now.
You could use the word courtship.
Yes, courtship. Wooing
courtship,
or, trying to entice the woman and to achieve success in winning her over. You know, and I equate it back to, you know, a guy going to run a marathon.
Uh-huh.
You know, he trains and trains and trains and trains and trains so he can run the marathon and win the trophy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's happening is women saying, oh, you don't have to train anymore. You don't even have to run the marathon. Here I am.
Oh, that's a very good analogy, April. Very good.
But it's amazing. That's exactly what's going on. And it's creating all kinds of confusion. It just really is. And people may say that I'm old-fashioned, but I like to keep things simple. And I don't think, certain as we might be, I don't think that people have changed that much at their core. People still want to feel desired. Men still want to desire. And on some level, men like to be bewitched. They do. They like to, like, fantasize about a woman, and they like to think about her and have romantic and sexual thoughts with her, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong, and they're pretty much hardwired to want to pursue.
Yes.
To chase.
Yep, and women...
And that, you know, that's an evolutionary kind of thing.
Well, see, that's the interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
When all these people are, you know, this firestorm of getting angry... I have yet to see a single person come up and say just exactly that.
Really?
It's evolution.
Oh.
No.
Mm-hmm.
If you go and you look at all the comments that have been posted,
mm-hmm.
you will notice there's not a single person. And you know why also? Even if they're thinking it, they're petrified to say it because it's so politically incorrect to say, he's a guy. Of course he wants to be sexually attracted. How dare you say that? We can't say that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to also acknowledge the truth that men are more visual than women.
Yes, I mean, that's, they are.
They are. And I think that's a very good reason for a woman making herself as attractive as she can be. Because the man responds to that. I mean, that's just the way it is. April, one reason we're friends is that we're on the same page a lot. We're both a little more traditional and like-minded.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes, and we absolutely are.
Yeah.
And I guess we probably infuriate people as equally.
So if anybody's listening to this and you want to make a comment back, I must say that I think a lot of the people listening to the show listen to an archived version. Not as many listen to it live. But if anybody's listening live and you want to have a different opinion, April and I would be happy to entertain it, and you need to call 888-874-4888. And Jason will answer the phone and probably pre-screen and get you on the air if you, because we're up for that, right, April?
Absolutely. Yeah. I absolutely am. But it is interesting that nobody has said what you said about evolution in this woman's defense, because it would be interesting to see how people respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it really would.
One, I know, and I just came last weekend or the weekend before last from San Francisco and a couples conference, and one of the keynote speakers was Helen Fisher, and I've been following Helen Fisher for years, and she is an anthropologist as well as a sexologist, and she's looked at people's brains on using functional MRIs at Rutgers University. And she has determined a lot of very interesting things. But, for instance, in the beginning of a relationship, there's lots more testosterone and dopamine running. People newly in love, and then when a relationship is more established, there's more oxytocin, the cuddle chemical, and vasopressin, which helps with bonding. But she also talks, including in a number of her books, about evolution and how people are kind of, from an evolutionary point of view, were designed to stay together for about 3 years to raise a child so that they can be a little more self-sufficient. And she also talks about men pursuing and women.
Oh, really? What does she say about that?
Well, she says that men want to spread their seed. And they can. And women, when they're pregnant, since it's 9 months, often want to, in the early years, days of early humans. So if a woman got pregnant for 9 months, she's very vulnerable. So she needs maybe even another man to bring her food. So she might, she looks for a man who's a provider. And she might even take on another man if he can bring her food and protect her. So these kinds of things go way back.
Interesting.
Yeah, Helen Fisher, look her up. She's worth noting. And
I think she's a TED Talks person you mentioned. Too,
oh,
right?
She is, yeah. But I was also talking with you off the air about Esther Perel, who was another keynote speaker at our couples conference. And she says a lot of things about sexuality and relationships, including in her book, Mating in Captivity, which is an international bestseller. And she says that we have to keep things spicy in our long-term relationships. What?
So she would agree with this
Helen Fisher
article then. The article
absolutely
that Firestorm
she would.
Created.
Wow. Yeah. Well, let's go back to this. I don't want to dominate the conversation here. Although one of the nice things I appreciate about us is that we are friends, and it is more of a conversation than an interview.
Oh yeah, it's more of a discussion, which I think is what makes it more interesting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Out here just to plug a book or something. No.
Oh, but do you
not.
Have
and
a book
very
you want to
put in your point of view?
What say the last part, I interrupted you. Sorry. Say that last part again.
I'm very interested in your point of view on these things. I mean, my goodness, you've been doing this for so long and you're so good at it. And why wouldn't I want to know what you think?
Well, thank you. And I have equal admiration for you because you and I do, we work in different venues, but we're all about helping people make better choices and get along better and understand better.
Do you think men paying for the date sets up a dynamic where the men then control the relationship?
Not necessarily. I don't believe that. But I think it requires a discussion. Now, if the man is very wealthy and the woman doesn't have as much money, then it could be more acceptable. I mean, this whole business of money and dating, you know, the cultural expectation is the man pays, and it stems from two related sources. And first is the historical, political, and economic inequality that women continued to work to correct, because it was only 1920 that women could first vote for president, only 1920. Mm. So our culture has been conditioned for centuries by the ethos of male dominance. And from that place, it's quite natural that a man should pay. But then as women gain more equality, this norm might continue to erode. And I think it probably should. And so it depends. You know, it just depends on the situation.
So on a case-by-case basis.
Case-by-case. And maybe in the first date, the man says, and this can be very complimentary, you know, I want to pay. I can afford it, and I want to pay. And then, and then I know you have said that a woman can contribute in other ways, like getting tickets for something. Geez, I can remember doing this because back in the late 60s, early 70s, that's how old I am, I can remember that most of my dates paid. But I would pay back by making a nice dinner, getting some play tickets. But back in those
days. That's, yeah. Well, I still believe in that. And I think something else that needs to come into the equation is how much it costs a woman to get ready for a date.
Oh,
I mean,
yes,
women
yes.
go out and get their nails done, they get their hair mm-hmm. done, they get a new outfit. They do all of these things, most of which men don't have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think him paying for the first date is kind of saying, you know, I appreciate all the effort that you went to. And I think it's, again, it goes back to who asked for the date. Now, assuming he mm-hmm. asked for the date, I don't know why people think that the woman should, you know, pay at that point because he's asked for the date, and it's the equivalent of going to a wedding and having a cash bar.
So, April, what do you think? How does that change when there's online dating and you meet on Match.com and you agree first? You know, hopefully there's at least a phone conversation before you meet, but sometimes people only email or text, and then they agree to meet. And I think maybe that changes it a little bit. Maybe it's they each pay.
Well,
that's
here's
treat.
The thing. I think it sets up. I think that you can tell a lot, and it's mm-hmm. always to me a very interesting test. You can tell a lot about a guy and his interests based upon what he does at that
mm-hmm.
moment.
Mm-hmm.
If he pays for the date or insist upon paying for the date, number one, he's telling you a bit about his values. And for a first date on a online dating, it's always best to keep it short, so let's assume they've gone for drinks.
Right.
And he insists upon paying. Now he's saying, you know, he's a gentleman and he has, you know, traditional values. And
yes.
He appreciates that you've come out. Now, if he wants you to pay for the date, he's also sending you a message.
Right.
So I kind of like that, because now you know, if you're wise, you know kind of where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not interested enough to pick up the tab for your drink.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very, very telling.
What I hear among my millennials, my clients, is that with online dating, they almost always split the check on a first date.
I think it's nice to, if you're the female, mm-hmm. to offer to pay and to allow the man to push your hand away and say, oh, no, I'll do it. Because
yeah.
I think really good guys like mm-hmm. to do things for women. I do. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes them feel, look, every guy, in my opinion, wants to be Superman for
mm-hmm.
the woman. He wants to be her, if he's interested. Now, if he's not interested, that's a different story. But that kind of clears it right out of the way, out of the box. Now you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But a guy who's interested in a woman wants to be her hero. He does.
Yes.
And by you offering to pay and him getting to push your hand out of the way and say, oh, no, I have this, that makes him feel good. And ultimately, the women that men are attracted to, in my opinion, are the women that make the man feel the best about himself. That's the one he remembers.
Yes.
And it's not as much about what she looks like, which is kind of interesting. It's more about how she makes him feel.
Mm-hmm.
Does he feel good about himself? Now he gets to be the hero because he's coming in and he's paying for the check. And it makes him feel good.
And
particularly when she's offered.
Yes. No, I agree with that. I think as relationships progress, there certainly are, I'm going to say the obvious, there certainly are many ways that a woman can make the man feel good about himself, besides
Absolutely.
The monetary thing, of course. And it's
yes.
appreciating him. A lot of men don't get appreciated enough, and you know, when they have good qualities and they care about you and cherish you, you need to say, I really thank you. I value this so much. I really do. And so then there's this mutual appreciation.
I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
Showing appreciation is very, very, very important. But
yeah.
back to our thing real quickly, because I failed to mention one thing about this paying and not paying.
Yeah.
I think the key for women
mm-hmm.
and for men is to be real honest with themselves before they even get into dating. What kind of relationship do they want?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very important. Because if you're looking for a traditional relationship and you want a man who is going to be a good provider,
mm-hmm.
and then you go in and you start paying for things, okay, don't be mad now when he hasn't lived up to your expectations, what it is that you really wanted. And if you're a guy, if you're a young guy who wants a woman who's going to go 50-50, you need to set that up from the beginning. I mean, you got to be
mm-hmm.
honest with yourself about what it is you want.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
So,
I absolutely agree. And that's why back when you asked me the question earlier in this conversation about can it create, if the man pays, can it create a power problem? I said, well, it depends on how they communicate. I think you need to set that up from the beginning, what you want,
I agree
like
with
you say.
What it is that you want, and your actions are going to say a lot of it. But
mm-hmm.
if you're looking for a traditional relationship, even if it's not politically correct, be honest with yourself, because it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks, because it's going to be you and one other person in the relationship, but you better know what it is that you want. Because otherwise, you're wasting a lot of time and you're wasting a lot of money. It's expensive to date.
It's expensive.
It's expensive for women to get ready to date. It's expensive for guys to pay for dates, or if you're splitting them,
mm-hmm.
you got to date wisely. You got to know what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the box, you got to be honest about it. Even if you don't like what it says about you, at least be honest about it.
I think that if sometimes people know pretty within 15 or 20 minutes if they're doing online dating that they're not so interested in this person. So then they're not going to be motivated to say what they want. They're going to say, I don't think this is going to work out between us, and so they move on. But
right.
If it's somebody that you're attracted to, then you do want to have that discussion.
Well, it's the physical stuff initially. Then it goes back to what everybody's beating Amanda up about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you physically attracted?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the initial thing is. But, you know, I don't care how physically attractive a guy is or a woman is. If they drown puppies, all of a sudden they're not real attractive anymore. So you got to get to know somebody. You know,
You do. And one of the things that Helen Fisher said in this couples conference that I totally agree with, she said, and I've seen some evidence of this in my practice, that a lot of people will spend a month or more just texting and emailing back and forth with an online contact. And she said, you know, after enough of this, say you have 9 people that you're emailing and texting with, you've simply got to set up an in-person meeting. Face to face, you won't know if you're physically attracted to the person until you do face to face.
Diana, you would be shocked at how many people on my forum have never met, and they are in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they consider themselves in relationships, and they have never met, and it's been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, and some of them even think they're in exclusive relationships. Strictly online. You'd be amazed.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't be amazed. April, we're coming to the end of the program, and I really hope I can have you back. We had part one and part two last year. We need to have a part two this year. So the challenge will be to find a time when you can be on when you're available, because I know how busy you are. So I want to thank you so much, April. You always contribute.
It's such fun with you. It really is.
Well, it's fun for me, too. And you really offer a lot of good ideas. And so I will write up a summary of this show, and then it'll be archived, and people will want to listen, I know. So
please give Brian my love, would you?
I will. Thank you, April. We'll do this again sometime very soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Diana. Bye-bye.
Bye.